Oh, this one comes with a table.
A lawn chair with a table?
Like two lawn chairs and a table. It's like a third piece.
I'll only have lawn chairs in our new podcast studio if we have to like pack them up every time and it's super annoying.
It's got like those bags you have to somehow shove it back in.
Yeah, it's not a lawn chair experience unless you hate yourself trying to put it back together.
Right. Easily. Or we can get like a normal bean bag. I think you're getting what you pay for here.
The bean bag looks problematic.
Yeah, it looks like it would like rip after like a month. You know what I mean?
You call me fat?
What? No, just like in general.
Like, yeah, it does look kind of flimsy. Like,
it doesn't look like it'd take a lot of wear.
Maybe not the best bean bag material.
Right.
Also, if we get one that's like super loud, it'll pick up on the mics.
Oh, we don't want that. I mean, yeah. I guess like the lawn chairs could do that too.
Not as much, though. There's not as many beans in lawn chairs.
Right. Almost no beans.
Typically no beans. Lawn chairs.
That maybe isn't loud. Do they make those? I don't know.
A not loud lawn chair? Is that what you just said?
No, not loud bean bag.
Oh.
Like there's sand in it instead or something?
Podcast beanbag chair?
Oh, what?
Is that what you're saying?
Is that, yeah, silent beanbag chair.
If it's not a thing, then I think we just started a new company. Like,
yeah, like...
manufacturing silent beanbag chairs?
We have to cut this out if we're recording.
Yeah, we are. I'll cut it out.
We want our idea taken. Okay, everybody, so, welcome back to the Trade Warriors Podcast.
What's up, bitches?
Yo, I don't think you're bitches. We talk about the latest trades in all sports. James Harden is gone to the Nets today. Biggest news breaking. Trade him for like 4 first round picks. It's insane.
That's a lot of picks.
Yeah, now he's on the team of KD and Kyrie Irving, which is nuts. Coached by Steve Nash.
The Knicks?
The Nets.
The Nets?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Knicks? The Knicks is a basketball team.
Yeah, it's New York.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just kidding. We talk about trade paperbacks, comics.
We're not a sports podcast.
We're
to
brothers.
Be clear.
He's Nathan. I'm Daniel. And we read comics.
Yes. We don't watch sports. Daniel does, but that's not what the show is about.
Did I miss anything?
No, I think that's everything.
We should.
You didn't call listeners bitches, but you know, other than that, I think you nailed it.
Sometimes I feel like we should just record this once and then just insert it so we never mess it up.
Look, that's easy for you to say and an extra 3 minutes for me to do, so
it's not my time.
Yeah,
same with like the ending where we plug everything. I'm just like I'm so tired by the end. I'm like,
I mean, we're not even like using a whole lot of energy, we're just talking. I don't know why you're tired.
We talk for hours and we do with passion,
so much passion that I'm retired.
I'm exhausted from all these hot takes I have.
You have so many hot takes.
There's a lot in the body.
Yeah. So, we talk about comic books. But first...
we talk about the...
the news.
Yeah.
The news, yes. Oscar Isaac confirmed to be Moon Knight. Finally.
What?
Yeah.
That wasn't confirmed like a month ago?
No, he was just in talks or whatever. People were like pretty sure, but it is now confirmed by the series cinematographer.
You could have never told me that, and I would still assume that he was Moon Knight.
I mean, I probably would have assumed that as well, but, you know, whatever.
Anyway, a new series called Radiant Black kick off Image Comics superhero universe.
I heard about that.
Yeah. Have you seen it? Like the cover?
I've seen the cover of it, and it looks pretty cool.
Looks pretty cool.
It's by... who's the dude's name? Or what was the dude's name?
I don't know. It reminded me of like...
It's the guy that does like Power Rangers and like actually made like a successful Power Rangers comic book.
Oh. Kyle Higgins?
Yeah, that's it. Kyle Higgins.
And then Marcelo Costa. It kind of reminds me of like... what's that Robert Kirkman like superhero where he's like Iron Man basically? It's like Tech something?
Tech Hawk?
Tech Knight? No, that's...
I don't know. You know more Kirkman stuff than I do.
Fuck, hold on.
While you look that up, Jeff Lemire has plans for new comic books with Gabriel Walta, Dustin Nguyen, and Andrea Sorrentino.
What?
Not all in one book, but separate plans for all of them.
I know. That's kind of what I was expecting, but that's nice.
Yes, it's awesome. And there's project names for them. They're not the official like book names.
Tech Jacket. That's what it was.
Tech Jacket. Yeah.
You know Tech Jacket.
Yeah, he has his own trade, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got like an ongoing series, I think.
Interesting.
Anyway, but those are great. He's collaborated with them before, and it's all been dope.
Can you name the books that each of those artists have been on with Lumiere?
Walta, Sentience.
Yes.
Sorrentino, he was on Green Arrow, and then also
you know Gideon
Falls.
Yep.
And then what was the second one?
Dustin Nguyen.
Dustin Nguyen, that's Descender and Ascender.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Those are all great series, but yeah, so one of them is tentatively being called Project Jackknife, and that's going to be one with Gabriel Walta. It's a new ongoing series. And there's another one called Project Pavement, which will be with Dustin Nguyen. And, you know, he said that Dustin is still finishing up Ascender, and he and I have another short project after that. So Project Pavement will likely not see light until 2022. Project Jackknife with Walta will be a late 2021 launch, as he says. The third book is an original graphic novel or miniseries. They're still discussing the format, drawn by the Gideon Falls co-creator Andrea Sorrentino. And it's a completely different genre than Gideon, he says, and a real change of pace for us. And so we'll call that one Project Bark. So I think it's going to have a dog in it, drawn by Sorrentino.
Oh, I was thinking about trees.
Maybe.
I'm like, there's already, what are they going to do? They already have Family Tree.
Yeah. If it was about trees, I assume he'd call it like Project Oak.
If it's a dog book, I'm buying every issue.
Absolutely, dude. It's time for a Jeff Lemire original graphic novel with Sorrentino.
Yeah, dude.
Can you imagine Sorrentino going from Gideon Falls, a book where it's actually everything actually looks really disturbed and scary, to like drawing a book about dogs?
Yeah, what if it's like how dogs see the world? Like
that, I would fucking, I'm all for that, dude.
There's rainbows and it's super trippy and everything's happy.
Yeah.
Everything's great. There's always good news.
Honestly, it would be pretty incredible. And then don't forget, Jeff Lemire also draws, and he's also starting a new project that he will draw, but it is in its very beginning stages. This man just doesn't sleep. It's unreal how many projects he has going at one time.
He's such a great example for what I'd love to be someday.
Yeah.
Just like not in comics, but like anything.
But yeah, just like
always just completely grinding,
dedicated and
always
doing
pushing
that.
Pushing out new shit.
And it's all quality.
Yeah, all high quality. I just want like his art studio or whatever. It's so sick.
Yeah.
Like with he's got like all this original artwork on the walls and stuff like that. He's got a bunch of bookshelves with tons of books. He like posts like pictures of his bookshelf. I'm like, oh, this is
Lemire?
Great. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I sent you like a picture of it. He's like, oh, I've been going back to these shelves recently. And I'm like, I don't know what this means, but I should read all of this.
Yeah. Just, oh, like he's going back to them for like inspiration for other work that he's doing?
Yeah. Either I mean? Inspiration or references.
Oh, okay.
That's all my news. I really wasn't looking out for anything.
I got a couple different things. Nice. A little bit more drama as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. So before we get to the drama, though, Ubisoft is making an open-world Star Wars game with the developer of The Division is taking the lead. So The Division is a Tom Clancy game. It's just like an open-world game where, like, I don't know, the government's been overrun and you're just kind of like walking around the streets of New York and there's a bunch of, like, I don't know, bad guys there. I've been playing it lately. It's pretty fun, actually. It's not a new game by any means, but it's pretty good. And so I think that developing team will make a really good Star Wars game.
Yeah, this is great news because everything's always like, this is the story. And yeah. Then we also have multiplayer if you want.
Very linear, yeah.
Like, I guess on Fallen Order,
yeah.
that was relatively open world, but it was like four planets that you could go to.
Yeah.
And if you want to do all these extra stuff to get parts or...
There aren't even side quests really. You could just go to those planets and fight the same, automatically generated
monsters and shit.
Yeah.
Or so, aliens.
Like, I guess you could go wherever you wanted, but it's only within those limits.
Yeah.
Not really open world. It's still pretty linear storytelling.
I think side missions would be cool. And then, much wider span of what we can visit and do, I think would just be a lot of fun.
I agree. Yeah. It's not, we don't have any information on like what it's going to be about or what even like time period really.
So it'll probably come out like 2 years.
Yeah. It could be like, you know, similar to Knights of the Old Republic, or it could be something completely different. So
yeah,
who knows? But apparently they want to have it released this year. So I think I read somewhere that they have been working on it for about a year.
Oh shit.
So it's like pretty in development.
That's so dope.
Good stuff.
Can't wait.
Have you heard of Disney, Daniel?
No, what is this?
This is it's a small little startup company, and they have a streaming service.
Is it about knees?
Yes, Disney's.
Tell me about Disney's.
Anyway, so Disney Plus released the like how many episodes and how long those episodes are for all the Marvel stuff that's coming out. So,
WandaVision. We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I mean, I think it's kind of interesting because they're all like pretty different. Like WandaVision, 9 episodes that are 30-minute episodes.
Okay.
Falcon and Winter Soldier is going to be 6 one-hour episodes. Same thing with Loki, 6 one-hour episodes. She-Hulk will have 10 30-minute episodes. And then Moon Knight will also have 6 one-hour episodes. So a little bit, all over the place. She-Hulk surprisingly has the most episodes out of all of these. But Falcon and Winter Soldier have like 6 hours worth. It's just like a double movie, kind of split up a little bit, you know?
That's cool. I mean, there's tons of, you know, shows that are like 15 episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there are also like 40 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no commercials here, so I guess that'd be nice.
Yeah, that's a solid amount.
Yeah, because then it won't be like filler episodes. It'll be like probably important things.
Like everything's to the point.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what I would prefer.
In a part of the main plot? Of course, yeah.
That's definitely a big benefit of streaming services is just like they, I guess whoever, you know, is show running it can determine what they want the pacing to be in general.
Yeah.
Like the pacing for a 30-minute episode, I imagine, is drastically different from a one-hour episode.
Of course.
And then the amount of episodes, it seems like they're able to at least play with a little bit, so.
Yeah, I mean, that was my main issue with like all the Netflix Marvel series is that they're all like 13 episodes.
Yeah.
And like 70% of them were unnecessary.
Yeah. A lot of them, especially in like, I felt like Iron in like Fist. Luke Cage, Iron Fist, all of it was completely necessary and that's a perfect show. So don't.
That first season I had to fucking crawl through. It was awful.
It's a tough show.
I was like, oh God.
And like they put all the bullshit in Iron Fist in the beginning. Like I think it's pretty good at the end. But all the bullshit stuff is in the beginning. In my opinion, that's my analysis of the show.
I just remember not liking it.
Yeah, that's fair.
This
is
like 4 years ago or something. I watched it.
I like it enough. It's whatever.
Sure.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. But let's get into some drama that's been going on.
Is it about that same thing from last week or something else?
No, it's a different drama.
Nice, new tea.
So the world's kind of falling apart and burning, or at least in America. And, you know, the Capitol storms. And in the Capitol, there was some people sporting the Punisher logo.
Oh,
and, you know, the Punisher logo is it's just like that simple skull. You've probably seen it on a truck or on a vest of some sort if you're not familiar. But
I'm
almost positive 90% of the people don't know who the Punisher is. They just like the skull. Or if they do know who the Punisher is, they don't know that he's insane.
Right.
They just know him as a guy that shoots guns pretty good, and they want to be
they might know him as like a veteran as well.
Maybe. But there's been a lot of kind of backlash recently from Marvel to do something about that in some way. And like, whether that be, some people are saying change the logo in some way, like so that it's not like that, so that they're not affiliated with that like typical Punisher logo. I saw some people saying that like they should just stop like publishing Punisher, which I don't think is probably the way to go, but
drastic.
It seems a little bit drastic, yeah, especially for something that's not really, like, Marvel's fault, but at the same time, they have been, like, pushing a bunch of, like, Punisher logo stuff, but it's hard to really dictate what's wrong here, but I have a couple different perspectives here, one of which is from the Punisher comic writer Garth Ennis, went on record to call anyone sporting the brand a halfwit, and he said, "I've said this before a couple times, but no one actually wants to be the Punisher," and this said, "Nobody wants to pull 3 tours of duty in a combat zone with the last one going catastrophically wrong and then come home with a head full of broken glass to see their families machine gunned into a bloody offal," whatever that means, in front of their eyes and then dedicate the rest of their lives to cold, bleak, heartless slaughter. So that's a statement from Garth Ennis, which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, he's very important to the Punisher, you know, lore and
exactly
canon.
And then also part of this article, I don't even know who published this. I just read it and took screenshots, but there's also the Punisher series on Netflix that, you know, kind of brought the character back to mainstream audiences. And I guess an increasing number of police officers have started to use the logo as well.
Yeah, I think Detroit has it on like their like squad cars, like on really? The on like the hood.
That's fucked up.
That was something that came out like a couple years ago. I doubt it's still there, but
yeah. And Punisher co-creator Jerry Conway previously said any law enforcement official that chooses to use the logo is an outlaw. And he tweeted, any cop who wears a Punisher logo in his official capacity is identifying law enforcement with an outlaw. And these cops, quote unquote, are a disgrace to a serious police officers everywhere. They show an imbecilic level of irresponsibility and should be fired or whatever. So pretty hot takes.
Like even changing the logo wouldn't do anything. That's just like a logo.
It would just be like Marvel distancing themselves from the beliefs of people that are like choosing to purchase and wear that and represent themselves with it.
Yeah, law enforcement officers aren't supposed to like see themselves as Punishers.
Yeah,
they are to like protect the people, so that should not be something that they're like sporting.
Yeah, you know,
that's weird.
It is,
but and then also taking it from publishing, I don't even know if there is a Punisher book out right now, but that's not gonna solve anything.
Yeah. And so John Bernthal himself also kind of put his two cents in on the matter. He was, quote, retweeting an initial tweet and said, I'm a Punisher fan. No matter how many nut jobs steal his logo, I'll still be a Punisher fan. They don't understand what it truly symbolizes. If they did, they wouldn't wear it. And then John Bernthal said, I'm with you. These people are misguided, lost, and afraid. They have nothing to do with what Frake stands for or is about. Big love. And they signed it J, which is pretty sick.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of interesting, you know, kind of conversation coming up from this. I don't really have an answer, but probably one of my favorite suggested answers to it is this dude at Matt Southworth, who said, I got an alternate idea, make the Punisher gay, and then put this
like a rainbow on
put a rainbow on the Punisher logo. And I think that's not a half bad idea.
I'd so wear that shit.
I would absolutely wear that shit. Are you kidding? Because it's changing the Punisher. People are like, these weird people are idolizing the Punisher, and then all of a sudden he's gay. It wouldn't change the comic at all.
No.
There's no Punisher comic where he has like a love interest, really, outside of like, his, you know, outside of his family. But if he turns gay, which, you know, maybe he was always, whatever.
There could be.
It doesn't change the book that much.
There could be sort of like a retcon where he like, you know, has eyes for a commanding officer or something, or one of his like someone on his like platoon or something.
Yeah,
but
I think it's a pretty. But doesn't solid
cheat?
Idea.
Doesn't cheat? But like, is always like looking their way. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then once
people find out boys about that, and they see Punisher logo merch and stickers that have like a rainbow on it.
Yeah,
problem solved.
I think that's it.
I honestly do, dude. Like, it's a really good idea.
Because if there's no, like, Punisher, I don't know, is that thing going on with when he's, like, wearing the War Machine stuff still going on?
No, that's done.
Okay, yeah, so new book.
New book.
Out the summer.
There's no Punisher going on right now, so. Yeah, I think that's the answer, honestly, Marvel.
Really quick fix. And then they just push the shit out of it.
Exactly.
Like, TV commercials. Like
really market. Yeah. Buy this comic.
Buy this comic. Look at Punisher kissing some boys.
Yeah, look at this. Is this what you want? No, it's not. Get away. Get rid of that logo.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Definitely kind of a different kind of comic book drama, I guess, that I haven't really seen before at all.
Yeah.
Because I've always noticed like the Punisher logo on things, and I'm always like, this person probably doesn't even know like what that is.
Yeah.
Which like the logo looks cool, which is why I think people sport it. It's like simple, but you know, whatever. But
I think I see it more on people who just like Skulls more than are Punisher comic fans.
Yeah.
Or maybe they've seen like movies, but
maybe
I've never met anyone. Granted, I don't talk to a lot of people who read comics, But they're like, oh yeah, the Punisher is my favorite superhero. I love all of his books.
Yeah.
I love the Garth Ennis run or whatever.
Yeah, it's always, if I see someone with that logo, I'm not going to assume that they read Marvel Comics.
They've probably maybe seen the show or like that old Punisher movie. Because there's like the, I think the more popular shirt is the one where it's like very smoky looking and like the teeth aren't really defined. They're almost like fading away kind of thing. I think people just think that looks cool.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
First of all, skulls are not very cool unless they're like sugar skulls or something.
Sugar skulls are cool.
Yeah, but like if you're a person that has, you know, shirts with skulls on it, it's like, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
I think a Punisher sugar skull would be kind of cool looking.
Ooh, good idea.
Is that a thing? It's got to be, right?
Probably. If you probably. Google that, it'll come up.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the big drama this week. I think that's everything I had.
Alrighty.
Let's get into the book that we read this week.
Yeah, speaking of politics.
Speaking of politics.
Dude, this really...
Let's say what we
this
read
This really
first.
Tickled me.
Dude, for sure. Okay, so we read Letter 44. I forgot to write down who did it, but it was Charles Soule. Some dude with the last name Albuquerque. Let me get it real quick. Book details. It is Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque, colored by Guy Major and
also Dan Jackson.
Yes. And the idea of the comic
lettered by Sean DePasquale.
I love that dude.
Yeah. Favorite letter. It's all about Russ Wooten.
Yeah. Russ Wooten. Yeah. He's good too. There's a lot of good letters out there.
He's just like on every like Robert Kirkman thing. And like, I think his name's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. So this is a book about a president that just got elected and is inaugurated, and the last president leaves him a letter with some surprising information in it.
So it's a book about Biden.
It's a book about Biden and Trump leaving office.
Yeah. There's some very funny parallels that I noticed.
I noticed that too. And, you know, it's like, so his, this is like, I love this book. Wholeheartedly, 100%. This is like one of the first like comics. I read this very early on in like my comic reading
career,
let's say. And I was like, holy shit, like this is what comics can be, is what it was like. It blows my mind. And it's like not initially a concept that I think, you know, would be easy to pull off, but honestly, of all, like, I think like this needs to be adapted to a TV show or some shit, like by HBO, because there is some fucking cool shit going on in here.
Yeah, it'd be really easy because there's not like a ton of, you know, like special budget effects. Straining things. Yeah. Yeah, like special effects.
What did you think?
I definitely love the concept. It's kind of what I expected when I hear the, you know, the synopsis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little dialogue heavy, but it's not like dense to where like I lose attention, you know, like what's being said is kind of like they're answering the questions that I have.
Yeah.
And then everything's, you know, it's not like boring dialogue.
It's incredibly engaging for what it is. Like for one of the main characters to be like a president, like kind of trying to do like presidential shit. It's not like boring. Like that initially sounds boring, but for the situation that's going on and what Charles Soule like writes down on the page keeps you interested.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really good job of like keeping interest, but it is like mostly talking, like what the book is, and then there's.
But when there is action, like,
oh boy,
the big part, the other like half of the story is there's aliens, right? And there's a ship, or there's a
spoilers,
crew.
Nathan.
I mean, that's, look at the fucking cover. Like, it looks like it's space, you know?
Nah, it's just it's a black page with some circles. That can mean anything.
But like, you know, when there is action going on with that crew, I think like the way that it's like exaggerated almost by Albuquerque, it's just really cool to look at as well. So whenever there is action, he goes all out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I like that a lot, but we'll just go right into it, I think. Actually, before we start the story, I really like just the design of this trade in general. Like, since it's like about presidents and stuff like that and secret files, the design of like the trade itself looks like a classified like file.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Like the first couple pages. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. The first couple pages have like different things that like are stamped classified, and there's like blacked out paragraphs.
It looks like it's in a manila envelope.
Yeah. And one of my favorite things is like the beginning like information page that has like Charles Soule as like the writer and Alberto Albuquerque is like artist and things like that. they don't say like writer, artist and all that. It says like writer in chief or executive artist or chief of letters, you know, like there's
editor
different
in chief. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So there's like, it gives them like political sounding like positions. And I think that's a lot of fun. So just, it's the small things that I like, you know?
Oh, there's like a letter.
Yeah. There's a letter. You can't really read it. And I don't think that that's super
important. I think that's the letter to the Clark.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's like, I definitely just scrolled right past that. I'm like, I'm not reading that.
Well,
shit.
Looking back at it now, I think that's the first message that he sends to the people out in space, but yeah, we'll get into it. So yeah, issue one. So Stephen Blades is the president that's just been elected.
It's a sick name.
Yeah. I would vote for Stephen Blades. Are you kidding? It sounds sick.
Dude, half of my ballot was just voting for like the coolest name.
That's not good.
Well, it was like the party I thought would be best. And then, the coolest name for sure.
Okay, cool. If they happen to have the coolest name, yeah. And they're your political party.
If they're both very boring, I'll just eeny, meeny.
Yeah, exactly. So, Stephen Blades just been elected president, and he's like officially inaugurated in this first issue. And as part of a presidential tradition, I don't know if this is like actually a thing, but, you know, in this book, there's like a tradition where the previous president, number 43, Blades is 44, which is why it's called Letter 44. But the previous president, Francis Carroll, wrote a letter to 44, catching him up on everything that he needs to know. And it essentially addresses that, you know, Francis Carroll, the previous president, started a bunch of wars and political turmoil in the United States because they found an alien ship between Jupiter and Mars, and they barely know anything about it. But they currently have a crew up there in space on a ship called the Clark, which has 9 people on it to find out more about the UFO.
Well, they don't know it's like a ship. It's just something.
There's like an alien thing up there, yeah.
And it's like, I guess, being cloaked. It's on like some sort of asteroid belt or whatever.
Yeah.
Some of the parallels that I like noticed was the chief of staff like looked at the letter and he's like, do you think it's written in crayon? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. I really like the actual letter, like the lettering of when Stephen Blades reads the letter, because the lettering looks like it's handwritten.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just like a simple effect, but it's one that, you know, I think should be appreciated, you know?
And then another thing I noticed, some of the dialogue was, the asshole is even skipping the inauguration. First president in history to do that. First president in history to do that. I'm like, what the fuck?
I know. Isn't
Charles
this crazy?
Charles Soule sees the future.
He does. And like, it's crazy because this last president's kind of seen as like an idiot and like kind of violent because he starts like 2 wars to put America into, which, you know, Trump hasn't done that, but he's kind of viewed as an idiot by a lot of people. So
yeah,
it's like, it's kind of crazy.
His reasoning for doing that is like, he wanted as many people in like the military as possible in case there's like an attack.
Correct. And which we find out later, but,
sorry.
I mean, it's fine. We can talk about spoilers and like shit
big,
right now.
I don't think that's a big spoiler.
Obviously this is a big spoiler.
No, that he said that in the letter, didn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
anyway,
this book was, or the trade at least, was released in 2014. So this is before, you know, a frame of mind. This is during Obama's administration.
Mm.
So kind of interesting to think about that. This isn't something that's like recent and like this wasn't inspired by Trump really in any way. So
right,
it's good to look at it through that lens. But so the first thing that Blades does as president is, well, one, he works out. He's like a big boxer, which I think is sick. Like, he wakes up early and goes to box and he looks pretty fucking buff. Like, we've never had a president this buff.
Yeah, definitely pretty jacked.
He's doing well for himself, but he decides to make contact with this crew.
Sidebar.
What's up?
In 2011, the Comedy Central roast of Donald Trump happened. And at the end, he says, I will be running for the president of the United States.
When?
So,
does he say when?
Because so
he could have gone in 2012.
So it was released in 2011. I think that's too late to try and build up a campaign. So I think
a year before?
Or no,
I don't
know.
They'd be
know.
Voting in 2011, huh?
Yeah. And okay. Then he'd be like, because this came out in March. Right. So they'd be voting like that November.
Okay.
So it was like the next thing. So Charles Soule saw
maybe
this roast. And he's like, well, obviously.
2014 is when the trade came out, which
he had plenty of time to write it.
That's
and
true.
Then it to come out in individual issues.
Hold on. Let's see when actual issue one came out. And that was October 16, 2013. So you're right.
It's perfect.
He knew.
Winston's farting. I thought he was shitting. Anyway.
He's just a stinky boy. Yeah, so the first thing he does as president, he wants to reach out to this crew and, like, talk to them. Because obviously this is pretty big in, like, human history, not just even, like, American history.
Yeah, there's only, like, a handful of guys that know about this.
Yeah.
Like, not even the FBI knows about it.
Not even, like, most of the the presidential administration know about it. It's mm-hmm. just, like, a select few people. So we end up meeting the 9 people that are on the ship, which is mainly, like, Mission Commander Charlotte and then Colonel Jack are, like, the 2 ones that we're introduced to first. And then, you know, the way that they talk is through just kind of, I don't know, these messages that take, like, 14 minutes in general to reach back and forth. So, yeah. So, yeah, it takes, like, 14 minutes or so for messages to kind of go back and forth because they're really far in space. But they hang up, you know, after talking to each other for a bit. And we see that Charlotte, one of the girls on the Clark, is pregnant. And presumably with the colonel.
I know.
Dude, such a good reveal. So, like, presumably it's with Colonel Jack, because, like, when we first see Charlotte and them together, like, they're, like, holding hands.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay, they're together on this spaceship. That's nice.
Because there's, I guess the trip is, like, a couple years.
It's been going on for 7 years.
What?
Yeah, they say that in the story. So
Francis. Oh, because he had, like, 2 terms.
Yeah, the last president had 2 terms. And so the Clark has been up there for 7 years. Or maybe that's when they first found it, and they've known for 7 years. But it got up there, like, pretty quick. So they've been up there for at least, like, a couple years.
I thought they were on, like, they said it was, like, day 100 something.
No, that's of President Blade's administration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've been up there for a super long time.
Because in The Martian, I think it takes, like, 3 years for them to get to him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter that much. They've been up there for a while, and a bitch
enough got time to get knocked up.
Yeah, a bitch got knocked up. And I think, like, Albuquerque did a really good job of hiding that, like, aspect from, like, the reader until they hang up, because we see a couple different panels of Charlotte, but either, like, the shading's, like, done really well, or it's a shot from, like, the shoulders up, and so we don't really see that she's pregnant, nor does anybody on Earth know that she's pregnant as well. I guess they've hidden that as well.
Yeah.
It's not super important in the story, but... then the Clark crew members, after they're talking, they perform a maneuver to get past this alien ship's or structure. They have, like, an invisible shield or, like, an invisible curtain, which has been blocking all signals from, like, probes that they send over to the ship. And once they make it through, we get a first glance of the actual, like, alien ship. And so
this part was really exciting because I'm like, holy shit.
It's fucking cool. Like, a lot of all the alien shit in here is so, like, refreshing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because it can be pretty easy to see very similar looking, like, UFOs or, like, ships.
Yeah.
But this shit looks wild. I don't understand how it works, which is how it should be.
It looks like a big antenna.
This?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I guess. It looks like... Like, there's a bunch of, like, lasers in there. It almost looks like it's that part of, like, the Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's about to blow.
The, like, the eye of the Death Star, I think is what they call it, or whatever.
If that's the case, like, then it's staring right at Earth.
We don't know that. We don't know which way it's looking.
But that, I'm, like, using wishful thinking it's an antenna.
Yeah.
And they're just using it to bootleg TV shows.
Probably.
Yeah, dude. Because you've read this entire thing, right? Like, you finished it. Does it come to an end, or does it just stop?
It ends.
So you know, like, how it ends. You remember how it ends?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know, in general, I forgot a lot of this.
Sure.
As well. Like, by the end of the first trade, I was like, holy shit, we're already up to here. Like, the whole thing's only, like, 6 trades, so there's, like, 30 issues.
Okay.
But there's a lot of crazy shit that happens.
But it's, like, with, like, Chew, I can tell you, you know, why, like, Chicken was, like, outlawed or whatever, and why those signs in the sky, like, appeared.
Yeah.
And what happens in the very last panel.
Yeah.
So, as long as, like, the important chunks of it.
Yeah, the questions that are raised here are answered.
Nice.
Everything that's, yeah, all the questions in the first trade are answered. So,
okay.
Anyway, going on to the second issue. So, Blades kind of gets a rundown, or like a thorough rundown on why the last president wanted to send a ship up there, which is essentially.
Kingpin?
Yeah, from this kingpin looking dude.
He's like the head scientist or something.
He's the head guy on Project Monolith, which is what they call the whole operation.
Yeah.
He's got a really tiny mouth compared to his head. I don't know if you've noticed that on the first page, but...
Yeah, very.
So, yeah, they wanted to send a ship up there, the Clark, which is, you know, they essentially just want to study its motivation and see what it wants from us, if anything.
Yeah.
And so then Blades remembers that, you know, he still, like, needs to be a normal president, and so... He waits to hear back from the Clark to see, like, if they ended up surviving going past that, like, signal barrier that they went into to see the ship in the first place. But
yeah.
Yeah, so he goes to do normal president stuff. Meanwhile, the Clark crew is, while they're in that, like, I don't know, that AT&T dead zone, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They're trying to fix the ship, so they split into pairs. So
yeah, it's like... They lost power, but it's like not like an EMT. Like everything still like EMP. Works. EMP.
Yeah. They see that like everything mechanical is working and there's no sign of an EMP or like anything else. Like all the chips are good. But they find out that the ship's sensors were overwhelmed when they were passing through that curtain, which caused like the ship to freak out and shut off basically.
Yeah.
So like I guess the breaker like flipped.
Yeah. And what's weird is that they have to go like outside of the ship in order to press the reset button.
Yeah, it seems a little flawed.
Seems like a design flaw
this,
for sure.
Actually, this scene kind of annoyed me a little bit just from a lettering perspective.
Why?
Because the crew splits up to like a couple different groups.
Oh, I agree. I already know what you mean, but
yeah. Say. And so like the word balloons,
they're like bordered.
They're color coded.
Yeah.
And there's not a very obvious pattern to me. Like, I thought it would have been, like, there's, like, three different splits or three different groups. And, like, it started yellow, and then the next group had, like, a red, like, outline. And then the people outside had green. But then, like, those rules or patterns that were established just kind of get thrown out the window. So I was kind of confused on why that was, if there was a specific reason.
And they all have, like, spacesuits on. So I don't even know who's talking, really.
Yeah, they're pretty sick spacesuits, though.
And I really don't. I don't know. I'm sure after reading, like, 36 issues, like, you get way more familiar with characters. But I just know, like, the pregnant lady, like, the old guy, and then, like, the
yeah.
chief or whatever. Or, like, the lieutenant.
Yeah.
So it's, like... Those kind of people, they don't, like, stick out to me, and their names aren't, like, memorable.
Yeah, they're not necessarily supposed to yet.
Okay.
But I do think that, like, by the end, I think Charles Soule does a really good job of, like, having each character kind of shine or, like, have their moment in their own way. And so you kind of get a good idea of who everybody on the ship is.
That's good.
Even though you don't know, like, their name.
Yeah.
So yeah, I even got that feeling by, like, the end of the first trade. But then again, I've read the whole thing. So do you feel like you know, like... Even if you don't know their names, like, you know, like, oh, that's the guy that does this or that's the guy that does this.
Yeah, there's, like, a guy who, like, is, like, a vet and he fixes stuff.
There's two, like, military people on there.
Yeah, and there's, like, the chief of, like, the military or, yep. like, the commander of the military part. There's the pregnant woman. There's, like, a black dude.
Yep.
I don't know who he does.
I'm not sure either.
There's, like, someone from India.
Yeah,
he seems Manesh. Yeah, I remember that. He fixes stuff.
He's a smart dude.
There's some Asian girl that's in there. I don't know what she does.
She's a doctor.
Yeah, right. She was
she's a doctor.
Medical.
Yep.
And then there's like an old dude who was like an astronomer.
Yeah.
And then there's like a part where they're like, "Oh, we got 9 people," and I'm like, "Do you?" And so I was just kind of
done. So there's 8 on the ship right now.
But there were 9.
There were 9 to begin with.
What happened to the one? Do we not know?
That's a great question, Daniel.
So that do we see that in a different trade?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was like, what the
You know
fuck?
What happens, yeah, in a different trade.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, they fix the ship. It's all good. But while like the two guys that were outside try to like fix the Clark and reflip whatever breaker they need to do or whatever, one of the army guys thinks that he sees something like outside and shoots his big space gun that he has, which causes them to... like break the tether to the ship, and they grab onto like a solar panel, but it's broken. So the military dude like cuts his hand on it, or like it impales straight through his hand.
Yeah,
and
I love that word.
That's a fucking cool scene for a couple different reasons. One, the gun shooting looks awesome. It looks like a Kamehameha blast.
Oh yeah, dude.
In my opinion,
it's called like, a Kamehameha wave. I think
wave whatever. Nerd.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's like a really satisfying blast from like a space gun.
Yeah, it's bigger than I expected it for sure.
Yeah, and like that's definitely some sci-fi shit to just be like the tether breaks and like all of a sudden they're like in free float for a second.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of like when he cuts his hands, the blood, I don't know what you call it. He bleeds in zero gravity.
It like sizzles out.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
He bleeds in zero gravity. Like, so yeah. It doesn't stay in his arm. It just kind of like floats there. And I think that's super sick.
I think this should have been like a bigger deal just as far as how space works.
Yeah.
Like his whole suit would have been compromised, but it's not.
I mean, maybe like...
maybe it's cut off at the arms or something.
Yeah. I don't think that they would design a suit so that if there's like... if someone somehow punctures a hole in it, then like the whole thing's compromised.
That's fair.
Yeah. But he manages, he has like the super glue thing and he puts it all back together. It's fine. But
yeah. So this guy, he thought he saw something and then he blames on like a gun malfunction.
Correct.
So just, and then he talks about like his PTSD. So that was some character development for that guy.
Yeah. And they decided to keep it a secret, or that guy does, the military dude.
Yeah.
He wants him to keep it a secret. So there's reasons for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back on Earth, Blades is also like looking at all the studies and like R&D technology that the government has done. Yeah, so all the R&D technology that the government has made, it's like a bunch of weapons and stuff, and it's so powerful, like all the stuff that they've made, it could like instantly end the two wars that America is in.
Yeah,
because of how like overpowered it is, but they keep it a secret. And he also finds a little later that the crew on the Clark is not set to come home.
Yeah, they don't have enough fuel to come back. I was like, that's fucked.
Which he was under the impression for a while that they were... like, he said to them, I'm going to get you back home.
So, a few things.
But everybody like, knew this going into the mission.
That's what the big man said, like the scientist guy.
Yeah.
But then the crew talks about, like, on their way back, like, in the trade.
Oh, they do, don't they?
So, I feel like they might not know that. Did I just...
No, you're right. I think they were under the, like, they know how much fuel they have.
Yeah.
I think they were under the impression that they would get more somehow.
Okay. So,
or like something would be sent to them, which would be giving them fuel essentially.
Right. So they did volunteer for this, that correct. They would go, and then they're able to just fucking like drop file, like all these like pictures and shit that they get.
Yeah.
And all their research, which is insane.
Yeah. They could put it just in a Dropbox.
Yeah. They don't have to like... wait for the shit to come back. Yeah. They just upload it to the cloud, space cloud.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, they volunteered, and they volunteered to die out there, basically,
mm-hmm.
according to this dude. Turn out they're like, what the fuck? We don't have enough fuel?
And I can't remember.
Freak out?
I can't remember.
Ah. Okay.
So, yeah, and then on the Clark, you know, after they get it back up and running, Charlotte gets, like, a checkup from the doctor lady from Kyoko is her name. But we find out that we don't really know who the dad is at this point. And so that kind of tells us that, like, everybody's kind of getting freaky, which naturally you would if you're up there for 7 years.
Yeah, and
you'd get
like
a little horny.
Is there, like, 9 of them?
Yeah, you'd want, yeah, and, like, 2 of them are girls, and that's it. So
yeah,
it kind of makes sense that they don't really know who the dad is, but clearly Charlotte's getting around.
Yeah, but then she's, like...
But the team also unanimously decided that the baby was, like, everybody's.
Yeah, and they voted to keep the baby, so it's everyone's baby.
Yeah, it's everyone's baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they say, like, now that they're inside the curtain, they're ready to study the big ship. So right now she's pretty clearly fond of the Colonel Jack dude. And so I wonder, like, if he thinks that it's his at this point or what, but...
I don't know.
Because his name's... What's his name? Colonel Jack?
It seems too simple.
Yeah. More like Colonel Jacked, am I right?
Yeah, sir.
He's pretty fucking strong, let me tell you. Okay, anyway, issue 3. So now we kind of jump to day 99 of Blade's presidency, and he worries that he hasn't really done much, or as much as he would have wanted, like getting out of at least one war. The chief of staff, I think, brings the idea of making the alien news public in order to tell the American people, like, kind of what he's working with. And Blades at first is like, fuck no, but after talking to them, he's like, I want to see a plan. Like, what's our plan of action for this?
Yeah, in order to, like, kind of get, like, forgiveness for, like, the wars and realize that the best thing to do really is to pull out of them.
Yeah, because, so, like, what would you do, like, in that situation? Like, naturally, you'd want to, like, stay quiet about it, but then there's a whole bunch of other shit that event triggers. So yeah, it's like, are the American people ready to know that there's an alien ship that we don't really know much about.
And especially with like being the president, you have to worry about like funding. And so if you're not funding a war, that can go to other things. So you look like a better president.
Yeah.
So rather than dropping this on like whoever gets the term next.
Yeah. When they're talking about this, they're in the boxing rink. The president's doing his boxing for his workout. And they're like, it's kind of difficult to remember who the important people and then like in like his administration is.
It's mostly just like the chief of staff.
Yeah, we find out the big important one is the chief of staff. But at this point, I'm like, who's this dude? How is he different from like the last guy? So, but I think in the end, yeah, it does kind of make it clear. On the Clark, Kyoto, who's the other girl on the ship, and Willett, who's the other military guy. Willett's like doing some maintenance on the ship because like the Clark is like a really shitty like spaceship. Like it's not put together very well, so they're always doing maintenance.
Yeah, it was made like super last minute.
Yeah, but the two of them bang and it creates jealousy on Manesh, who's like the other maintenance guy. Mm-hmm. And like that sex scene is pretty awesome.
Pretty hot and heavy.
It's like
my favorite part is like
it's pretty beautiful actually.
Like dude, look at this cover. It's like a snippet of the sex scene, and it's like just automatically saying like, "Hey, buy this book.
Yeah.
There's a sex scene in this issue."
Charles Soule, you're a genius,
smart man.
But it's like a couple silent pages, and just like the way that it's done is so well, like the coloring and like the expressions on people's faces, and even like
dude, this one. When you like go from nothing to just his face, it's like it's so funny.
It is pretty funny. But even like the sweat that's like kind of floating in the air around them kind of all adds to the atmosphere.
I don't know what the fuck they're trying to do here.
Yeah, that first position is a little bit weird.
Yeah. dude, I can't even imagine trying to have sex in zero gravity.
Dude.
Because like,
I mean, they're sweating. It's clearly pretty hard. You're
dependent on like, I don't know, pushing off against something.
I mean, you kind of see him grab onto like a handle that's there, so I guess they could utilize that, but he's clearly like grabbing onto her and they're just kind of like floating there. So I would kind of be worried about like banging my head on something.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sharp tools and stuff there, I'm sure, because he was just fixing something.
Or like, what if she, you know, comes up too fast and you like lose her and she's on the ceiling? She's on the ceiling.
You thrust too hard and just kicks her back.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. So, dude, sex on a ship would be just insane. Also, this dude's so muscular. Like, how do you stay this buff in zero gravity?
Yeah, because like, it's not like you're lifting weights or anything.
No.
There
is like a gym.
There's no gravity. There's a gym that and it's just mostly cardio machines.
Yeah. But everybody here's like buff.
You're not like picking up things
or no.
like pushing things.
You're not, I mean, maybe, no, you're not even, you can't even do like cable weight machines. Like the only thing that I guess kind of, you know, would make sense is it looks like this squat rack pushes down on you.
Yeah, I was looking at that, yeah.
But I don't know how they would be able to work out, like, your back or, like...
Bent over rows.
It's zero gravity. You're not rowing anything.
No. If you have this thing...
I guess if it's trying to push down.
You know how, like, the things where you go like that?
Yeah.
It's called a row? You do that. And then...
It would still be super tough.
You like, can do shrugs on that bad boy. You do deadlifts.
I think everybody should just be...
You do curls.
Not as buff.
Everyone should be pudgy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even that. I feel like there's not a whole lot of, like, fattening food on there.
Yeah, you probably are super low-calorie diets.
Yeah.
Just enough to, like, stay alive.
But it's just funny that everybody...
What grosses me out is the sweat. Just, like, it just... It doesn't, like, drip down your face. It just, like,
kind of... comes off of you.
It just shoots out of your face.
Yeah.
And it's, like, floating around you. That's disgusting.
I think it's kind of sick.
It's so gross. I would not work out if that's what happened.
Really?
I wouldn't be able to handle that now. And then what do you do with it? It just sits there?
I don't know. They leave the room and they push a button and then, like, the fan turns on and goes...
Do you gather it together and just make, like, a big, like... pool of like sweat?
After each set you take your sweat towel and you try and hit all the sweat in the air.
Oh man. I guess could a towel would be able to like absorb sweat, right?
Yeah, so you after your set you see the sweat that's in the air and you take your towel and you're trying to like wick, like I don't know, hit it.
You should be a scientist.
I should. I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, on the Clark, one of the astronomers, his name is Pritchard, he finds a particular asteroid interesting. And on the surface, it doesn't look too interesting, but when he tries to find out more about it, he, like, shoots a laser at it, reflects back to the Clark, but it comes back at the exact same signal strength, which means that something on that asteroid received the signal and then sent another one back. So normally, if it was just a normal asteroid, it would, the signal would come back, but it would be weaker because it's having to like travel twice the distance, essentially,
right,
going there and back. And so the fact that it was the same signal means that one got sent back to them. And so they figured some kind of message, and they want to devise a plan to actually go visit this asteroid. And then, and then back on Earth, the chief of staff gets like murdered in the bathroom of a restaurant.
He gets like injected in the neck with something,
or not like murdered, but it looks like he's murdered at first. Yeah. Yeah, but he gets injected in the neck, which causes him to have like a stroke, which probably means that someone the chief of staff talked to about revealing the alien spotting to America sent an assassin after him to have him killed.
Yeah, because he was in charge of, you know, making, like, I guess the plan.
Devising a plan to release that information, yeah.
Right. So it's got to be that one dude where he gives that folder to, right?
I would think so, yeah. He gives a folder to somebody at the Pentagon, and he, like, desperately tries to tell the chief of staff that's a bad idea because the American people will freak out and revolt and whatever. But Elijah, the chief of staff, is like, you're kind of bullshitting me. Like, give me a better report. And so I think that's, you know, who devises that plan. But, you know, right. I have a theory on who actually did it, but I've read the book and I can't remember who actually did it. But
what do you think? It was like the past president or something?
Or no, we find that out, don't we?
We basically
find that out.
Yeah,
that like the past president wants to keep it under wraps.
Yeah,
and so that there's still people from when he was in office that are still kind of working for him, kind of.
I think so.
But anyway, I think the build up to the actual like assassin scene is like done really well, because it's just like a normal dad boring his kids with like American history in like a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls up like real quick to kill him in the bathroom.
Dude, he disrupts the what's it called? The dude code or bro code?
The bro code.
And he goes to the urinal right next to him out of five.
Yeah.
And he's on the far right.
Yeah. He did not give the one urinal buffer.
For some reason, I think it's really funny when like people throw their ties over their shoulder when they go to the urinal.
Yeah.
And they show that in here, and I just think that's funny.
Like, why do you feel the need to do that? You're not going to piss on your tie.
Some people think that you would, because I always...
Does your tie go down to your crotch?
Some people don't know how to properly, like, tie it to, like, have the right length. It's supposed to go, like, just above your belt and just cover your shirt, but some people might do it longer.
Oh, that's dumb.
And that's wrong.
So Elijah's dumb anyway.
Yeah.
Also, the... Elijah's like dead body is horrifying.
Yeah, dude, it's all shriveled up, and you think he's just like
there's veins. He looks like out a
zombie.
Arms.
He looks like a zombie.
He does
honestly.
Look like a zombie, dude. It's crazy.
So
it's done really well. His dick's not out though. That's my only thing. He was pissing at the time, you know.
Oh,
He was at the urinal right when he got injected with that syringe. So like, I feel like, or maybe in the process of him having a stroke, he like, you know, puts his belt back on.
Or maybe as, like, the dude was talking, he was just finishing up.
That could be it, too. Dude, I like to think that he got attacked with his dick out.
To think there's just, like, one thing that a letter could have done to, like, wrap this up. Like, a little kind of sound to show that he zipped
like,
up.
Like,
and then we wouldn't be talking about this.
This wouldn't, yeah. It's too ambiguous, you know?
Right.
Or even if he places the lettering, like, there was no lettering on that page where he's dead, though. Like, if he, like, positioned the lettering so it'd be, like, over his crotch so his dick would be out, or you would think that would be, like, behind the lettering.
You know what? The way his body's positioned, you really only see his right hip, so I think it's possible that he could still be laying on it. And his shirt is, like, over his pants, so he didn't have the chance to tuck it back in.
True. It is all, like, okay. We'll have to get Charles Soule on.
Be like, hey, Charles Soule, come on the pod.
Is Elijah's dick out in the third issue?
Because there's no indication that he zipped up.
Yeah, we need to know. There's no lettering of a zip.
Yeah, he didn't shake it three times.
No onomatopoeia. So anyway, issue four. So previous President Carroll makes a short statement, which is his first since leaving office. And Blades' wife, Isabel, assures him that he'll be fine without his chief of staff, Elijah. At least until he recovers. So Blades thinks that he has a stroke and he's in the hospital right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, Blades appoints a temporary chief of staff, and he's a dude that worked under Carroll's administration and is super sketchy because the doctor tries to call the president, but this new guy. What's his name? Mitch?
Mitchum or something?
Mitchell?
Mitchin?
Something like that. But the new, he ends up calling the temporary chief of staff. He goes to the hospital and basically tells the doctor not to tell anybody, you know, what's going on here. Because the doctor found, like, the injection point in his neck. And so this villain guy doesn't want to tell Blade about it and tells the doctor to keep it to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, one, Isabel seems like a pretty bad bitch of a wife. I think she's written really well.
Yeah, definitely.
She's like, you don't fucking need him. What are you talking about? You're the president.
Yeah, she takes no shit.
And then even Blade is like, thank God he didn't run against me because I would have lost. I think that's cute. That's cute presidential couple shit.
Yeah.
And then...
badass first lady. We like it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate Charles Soule's like writing because his exposition is like helpful. Like when the doctor basically spoon feeds to us that like Elijah had an embolism and like how it's affecting like Elijah's survivability, like chance and stuff like that. I just think it's explains like really well. So I appreciate that.
Wait, like what?
So when he's like, when the doctor finds the injection point, he tries to explain to like this temporary chief of staff guy that Elijah had an embolism and he explains to us what that is.
Oh yeah.
And I just like appreciate that.
It's like just air in like your blood or something.
Yeah. And he's like, normally you wouldn't know that until, you know, you do an autopsy or whatever. And I just like that information.
Wicked smart.
Yeah. Good research. Yeah. So now, back to the Clark, there's a few people on the Clark that get in a smaller ship called the Bowman to go look at the, I wrote android, but it's an asteroid. And so Pritchard, the astronomer, is one of the ones that goes on the Bowman, and then two other guys. And when they get to the asteroid, they find a tunnel to go explore. And they can tell just from like the tunnel that they're in that they are like that the alien tech is way more advanced than anything that humans have because of how cylindrical it is. Like it's like a perfect cylinder, basically. Which is, I guess, something that humans aren't able to produce, but it just kind of gives them an indication that they have pretty serious, like, alien tech.
Right.
And so, yeah. And then also, Charlotte's water breaks, which accidentally cockblocks Manesh and
Kyoko. Yeah, dude, the water is just, like, floating around.
Yeah, like, Manesh and Kyoko make, like, fuck plans, essentially, and he's like, oh, hell yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, the water from Charlotte's, like, breaking water hits him in the face, which is kind of gross.
Pretty gross.
Yeah, but also that's a bigger and more urgent situation than getting your dick wet. So Manesh is like, god damn it.
Yeah, dude, they made a dick appointment. It had to be canceled.
Yeah. Had to be rescheduled.
Yeah, dude.
So
it's the worst.
And this is a small detail, but I like the frame where the crew on the Bowman like are inching up to the asteroid and they like are looking through the glass and they can see like reflections of like red on like the actual like that's coming from like the asteroid from like alien structures. I just think that shot looks really cool, but you can also see like their hands are like pressed up against the window. Mm-hmm. Just because of like certain spots on there.
Yeah, dude, this thing looks crazy.
Yeah.
Like the whole asteroid in general.
Yeah. And I just think that like some of the perspectives that Albuquerque like decides to draw are just super interesting. So anyway, on Earth, the OG chief of staff, Elijah, wakes up and he's half paralyzed, but he uses his hand to write Blades a note saying that he was attacked and that the doc told Michael, his interim chief. And so this makes Blades super pissed. Fuck. I'm going to say that again. Blad super pissed. So this makes Blades super pissed, obviously, because he didn't hear anything from... Oh, sorry, it's Michter, not Michael. Blades is pissed because, obviously, Michter didn't tell him about it. So... but then also in space, Pritchard and the other dude found a blue, like, glowy thing in front of them. And rather than go back to the ship, Pritchard decides to try and, like, study up close for, like, science and shit. And then he ends up teleporting himself and the other dude, Gomez, to an alien land. So.
Alien land.
Yeah, alien land. So the alien place looks like... like straight out of like Dr. Seuss or some shit.
Yeah, it looks like a forest with like, you know, some red and some green leaves, and they got these like little like ornament looking things floating around.
Yeah, they have they look diamond shaped, but they look diamond round shaped, and they're those are supposed to be like the aliens.
Yeah,
and I love that because I'm so sick of seeing like humanoid looking aliens or like things that clearly have like a head and eyes and a mouth
and like limbs.
Yeah. And like limbs. But so I really appreciate that they clearly made an effort to like get away from that. Also, what a dumb thing for Pritchard to do. He just kind of like floats into it. He doesn't know how much radiation is coming off of it or shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so obsessed with like
being the first to.
I mean, like, if you're in a ship for however long, years, we know at least.
Yeah. I guess this is something interesting and that happens.
And the only thing that he knows is what has been discovered by other people. And I guess, like, with, like, how mundane, like, the trip has been and then how important he knows his work is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
he just decides, like, fuck it, I guess.
Yeah, basically, the extent of the knowledge that he can get is just how far he's willing to go.
True.
So, if nothing's been fucked up, then he's just going to keep going.
And I guess it's expressed that they only have, like, 2 days on this asteroid before they're, like, too far to get back.
Yeah.
So, I guess
that's, they do?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, like, I thought it took, like, 4 days to get there or something.
4 days get there, 4 days back, and 2 days on the asteroid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they have like a limited amount of time there. It seems like they're only there for like a couple hours at that point. So like, sit on it.
It definitely doesn't feel like a week when you're reading it.
Yeah.
It feels like 30 minutes.
Obviously it's a lot quicker, but anyway, issue 5, this is where shit hits the fan. And this is honestly an issue where like, I couldn't like put the book down at all. Like I had shit to do when I was reading this and I was like, I need to finish this issue. And I've read this book before. So.
Yeah. This one I definitely blew through compared to like some of the last couple comics that we've done.
Yep. So the FBI finds a safe house looking place in Denver with...
Dude, this is like a replica of the White House. And it's like in a rock, like in a mountain in Colorado.
Yeah. And they see like a bunch of ex-SEALs that are like protecting it from afar. And so a group of FBI guys like infiltrate the house and they like sneakily knock out a few guys until... one of the guys that they actually like kill drops his mug on the ground, which like makes a crash noise. So there's like there's some FBI shit going on. But meanwhile, Blades is definitely on to Michter, the acting chief of staff dude. And he sends him off to go do essentially just a bunch of busy work all over the world to keep him busy or as busy as possible. I really like the few pages of like the special ops stuff that's going on. Like they're pretty sweet and they're like silent pages. So.
Yeah, it was good to get some, like, action pages and some that doesn't have as much, like, dialogue.
There's, like, a good balance of, like, human action and then alien action in this book.
Right.
Which I really like. Back with the Bowman boys, which is what I've called them.
It's pretty good.
The three guys on the expedition. So Gomez and Pritchard are exploring this, like, strange alien land. And Pritchard tries to, like, study one of the moving entities that ends up being, like, an alien lair. But he tries to, like, scan one and determine if it's alive. And when he does scan it, the alien, like, shatters and explodes. He doesn't really know why. But it shoots him back. He hits a wall and, like, his fucking helmet's cracked.
Yeah.
And so that's not a good situation. He doesn't even know if he can breathe, but he ends up being able to. It also turns all the other diamond-looking alien things, like, they all start to turn red and they start swarming Gomez, who has to, like, fight them off with this, like, space gun.
So, yeah, dude, they get really free. They turn like black and they have like these like red like circles. Veins or something on it.
Yeah.
And then like they glow up red like they're about to like fire, like shoot something. Like,
yeah.
Like Iron Man's like palm or something.
Mm-hmm. And I really like how exaggerated like Albuquerque's like facial expressions are.
Oh, dude, facial expressions are so important for comics, I think. Yeah,
they are. And like his are like so exaggerated like when Gomez is like starting the action, he's like and he's like yelling, but it's like it's really intense.
Yeah, the way he draws faces, it's like it's kind of unique in a way. I just feel like he makes them like relatively long.
Yeah,
and like the eyes and mouth are relatively small, I guess, like proportionally. Maybe it is on point, but he definitely leaves a lot of room for the facial expressions when he needs to use them.
And I think he adds like a lot of additional details that definitely aren't accurate, I guess, like anatomically.
Sure.
But it adds to the tone that each like person or like their general feelings at that time. And so I think it works really well.
And then what I really like is like how he uses like the cross hatching or like the the lines as shading to kind of show like kind of wrinkles in the face.
Yeah.
And it
shows that their really like face is like tensing up.
Yeah, almost. It really adds to what they're feeling. Yeah. Oh, this guy has Gomez on his forehead. That helps.
I think they all do.
They should all have that.
I think they have like nameplates like on their chest.
Is that
but it's never like there's never like good shots of them.
Oh yeah, I see Pritchard's on his left boob.
Yeah, I also like that we kind of see that the like we get a good feel for how these aliens work in like a almost like a mob mentality without being like we're not explicitly like told what's happening. We just kind of see that one of the aliens blow up, and so all the other aliens are just like herding onto Gomez.
Right.
So I just think that that's cool.
It reminds me of something, but I can't remember what it reminds me of, you know?
I kind of just think of them as, like, white blood cells. Even though I don't really know how white blood cells work, that's kind of, like, the idea is that it like, identifies a threat, and then there's a bunch that, like, attack the virus.
It reminds me of, like, if you're watching, like, Pokemon or something, and you see, like, a little lake of Squirtles or something, and you kick one of them. Like,
the rest as Ash probably, does, yeah.
Yeah, the rest are going to, like, you know, come and squirt on you.
Or yeah. Whatever.
I don't know what they
watch
do.
Out, they're going to squirt on us. Yeah, so anyway, Pritchard, he is able to breathe the air of like the place that they're in, which is good. And Gomez runs out of ammo fighting all those aliens. And they're about to be overrun when the third guy, Major Drum, comes in and he saves them, like with his gun and stuff. And he also sacrifices his helmet to Pritchard and tells Pritchard and Gomez to head back to the ship, since like they're more mission critical. So he kind of elects to leave himself behind so that two of them can at least get Pritchard back to the ship. And if they're able to get him back, then they can. But if not, then just leave him.
Is this the same black guy that was like the agricultural kind of guy that was talking to the painting?
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah. He doesn't know if they're going to make it back to save him, but he knows that they're more important to the mission.
Yeah. So. There might not be like enough fuel for them just to go back to get him again.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that one dude ran out of, or Gomez ran out of ammo, like, really fast, so this guy will probably be screwed for, like, a while, especially if he blows through it like the other guy.
It's also kind of interesting because when he saves them, Pritchard and Gomez just kind of, like, walk away. So, and we don't really see, like,
Major One guy Drum. Got stabbed through the leg, though.
Right. Yeah, I understand why they're walking away, but when they are walking away, Major Drum's not, like, shooting aliens off for them, you know?
I think he did that when he, like, came through.
Yeah, he does, but at this, like, that panel where they're walking away, Major Drum is just looking at them walk away. Like, he's not, like, fighting them off and, like, covering them while they're walking away. He's just, like, looking at them.
No, he got them all, I think, when he, like, came to the
rescue. So
then
why does he leave himself? Why doesn't he just go with them?
Well, they have to go through space to get back to the
ship. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Wait, why wouldn't they just, like, go in the ship?
Grab another...
Or, like, have one guy stay in the ship, and then the other guy take a helmet.
That's what they were planning on doing.
Were they?
Yeah, but there's only a certain amount of time that they have to be on that asteroid. So we don't know how long they've necessarily been there, I guess.
That's a cop-out answer, but okay.
It kind of is, but like, anyway, it ends up being that we don't see Major Drum die, but he's left on this asteroid, so we don't know what happens to him.
So we assume, yeah.
Yeah.
Does he come back?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty sick.
Sick. Yeah. I'm sure at some point I'll make time to read the rest of this.
It's totally worth the read, like, all
of
it.
I believe it, yeah. But I'm totally okay with, like, spoilers for the rest of it. I'll ask you about it in the end.
Okay. So, yeah, that happens. That's a big thing. And then, meanwhile, the FBI guys, they get overrun by, like, the guards that are in the house, and they get raided. And then they get taken to Francis Carroll, who's the guy in the house, who's using the house to, like, hide as, like, a safe house. But he does agree to go back with all of them to talk to President Blades. So I guess the big question we take from this is, why does Carroll feel the need to be this heavily guarded? So,
yeah.
It seems, like, a little particular. But anyway, going into the last issue, issue 6, Pritchard and Gomez, they make it back to the Clark without Major Drum. But they say that they are working up some sort of plan to get him back. So he's not just like stranded there, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pritchard goes to see the baby, and to his surprise, the baby is like not either his or even Colonel Jack's skin color, but closer to Major Drum's.
Yeah, he's like light skin.
Yeah, he's like Major Drum's kid for sure. And so that the baby was born pretty healthy from what it looks like, and her name is Astra, which means like stars, I guess.
Yeah, cool, dude, that's a great name.
That's a perfect name, yeah.
Have you seen Ad Astra?
No.
Do you know what Ad Astra means?
It sounds familiar.
I think that's also like a company.
Isn't Ad Astra like the movie with Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Okay.
It means like to the stars, I think.
Interesting.
So, good name.
Yeah.
I like it. Anyway.
And then later, Pritchard and Jack talk about the kid, and Jack tells him that even though Drum is like the biological dad, Astra is still everybody's daughter. And then it also kind of gives them a reason to like keep surviving, is what he says.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a silver lining. But like, imagine getting back from a mission like that and finding out that it's not your kid.
Oh, dude, for sure.
And then like...
And then it was the guy that you left?
Yeah.
And I was just like, ah!
My theory is that Drum knew that it was his kid, and he's like, oh, I'm going to like, you know, be such a hero, and I'm going to go get the milk. Essentially. And then he gets like stranded on the alien asteroid to get out of it.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
He's dodging those child support payments.
In space.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But on Earth...
Yeah, you can probably get out of that.
Yeah.
Be like, I'm in space. How am I supposed to pay for this?
I'm sorry, I was fighting off aliens. So, yeah. So, on Earth, President Blades is putting his plan together for, like, a conference when the Secret Service brings in ex-President Carol. And Blades asks him, like, questions about why Carol told him about the aliens in like the letter, as opposed to just letting him find out, or like why he disappeared and didn't go to inauguration, and especially had like guards at his place, and then asks him up front if Carol put an assassin on like his chief of staff.
Yeah.
And Carol like is able to like dodge all the questions pretty well from what it seems like. Like he has a good alibi for each of the different things.
Yeah, I didn't think he was like guilty.
You didn't?
Based off of his dialogue, yeah.
Really? Nice. Yeah, so Carol responds, like, well enough, and Blades leaves, but he leaves Carol a letter marked 43, and so Carol picks it up and reads it, and the letter, in the letter, Blades basically says that he knows Carol is bullshitting him, and Blades is using the crazy army tech that they've developed to get out of the wars, and he basically says not to fuck with him anymore. He uses, like, boxing references within there, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, like... quotes like Muhammad Ali or something.
Yeah. I really like the Muhammad Ali like drawings in here. Like he looks pretty good. And
yeah.
And they reference that like famous one where he's like hitting his chest with his glove and like looking down at the guy.
Classic.
I respect that for sure.
Do they ever say who Dr. Rowan is? Is that the one that was lost but we don't know what
happened?
That's
the one that's dead. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because they kept saying Rowan. I'm like, I don't remember that name.
Yeah. So he's the ninth person, but we don't know. Okay. What happened to him at this point?
Okay.
I can't remember what happened to him, actually.
Okay.
That well. So, yeah. Back on the Clark, Pritchard and Gomez brought back a piece of one of the aliens on, like, their Bowman trip. And they brought it back for their boy Manesh to analyze. And so he discovers that each little tendril coming out of, like, the alien is, like, also used to store data. I guess inside of them, like the way that our brains work, I guess each little tendril stores data, but it's similar to how PCs do it. But I don't know, the logic there is pretty like, it's pretty weird, but essentially he's able to use that to decode an image that's basically like a blueprint for something that the aliens are building. And then when Willett looks at it, he determines that it looks like a big fucking gun.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Why are they building a gun? What are they going to shoot? Is it Earth? Who knows?
Probably.
That's crazy. It is Earth.
Gotcha.
But also, I've shot a gun a few times in my life, and looking at that blueprint, I did not see a gun.
I think there was like parts of it that like reflected a gun, and that's what he was talking about. He said something about like
that's what Willis
exhaust
says.
Ports or something.
Yeah, he explains it, but in my professional gun opinion, it doesn't look like a gun.
Yeah, but that's true.
It's just an alien gun. It's fine. And then just to kind of wrap it up. It wraps up with the same assassin dude being told to abort while at a conference that Isabella's hosting, which means that she was probably about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
So that leads it to... It was probably Carol or whatever.
Yeah.
like had the hit.
It's probably Francis Carroll, yeah, that hired him in the first place. And then also Blades sends a final message like to the Clark saying that he appreciates them and they sorry to hear about Major Drum and shit and just remember that they're not alone or whatever, and then the book wraps up. So yeah. But like by the end, I feel like for a book with like so many characters, especially like out in space wearing spacesuits, I feel like I kinda know what everybody does.
Yeah,
and like he gives
luckily that they're all from like different backgrounds and they are you can distinguish them from each other rather than like having similar hairstyles and hair color that make it really hard to kind of read.
Yeah, like there's like a blonde white dude and then like a there's brunette white dude and then there's a black dude and an Asian person and then Charlotte.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I feel like they all get their own individual chance to like shine and do something. So you're like, oh yeah, this is the maintenance dude.
Yeah, or at
this
least the like doctor. Or at least like how they are, like their personality.
Exactly.
Which is helpful.
So it seems like it'd be really hard to like balance, but I think Charlestown does well.
Definitely.
So yeah, with that we'll go into Back Matter Matters.
Back Matter Matters.
And I still love how it's all designed. It looks like a classified like file or whatever.
Yeah, there's like pictures of people that are in it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Back Matter. It looks like it was all like, you know,
part of
staged.
Yeah. And it looks like one of the pieces is like the Clark crew, like 7 years ago before they went up, and so everybody looks young and they have like shorter hair and shit.
And then we see Dr. Rowan. We don't know what that dude's about.
Looks like a nice guy. Looks like Owen Wilson.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so
he's a geologist. Oh, so he said that he needed a geologist,
which is Rowan, Richard,
but they didn't have one because he was super dead.
Yep, he's dead.
Okay,
so there's also like creator bios or whatever, but it's really fun because they look like classified documents because it has like the stamp and shit over them. But
yeah,
Charles Soule was like still practicing law when he wrote this book.
He was practicing law like with a lot of books.
He was up until like I think a little bit.
I think like around like Darth Vader.
I think so. Yeah, I think around She-Hulk is when he said that he stopped.
Okay,
he did like a She-Hulk run. So I think he was done by the time he did Darth Vader. I know he was done by the time that he was doing Daredevil.
That's gotta be cool when you have like such like a hotshot job, like being a lawyer.
Yeah,
and then you just like stop that to be like a comic book writer.
I mean, he was kind of balancing both for a bit, so at least he knew that like he could do this.
Yeah,
but yeah, he was all. It also says that he performs as a musician, so like he knows music.
What?
Yeah, this guy is pretty. Charles Soule is pretty impressive. I don't know what he plays, but it's kind of cool.
Wait, where does it say that?
At the very last line. He writes and performs as a musician.
Huh. I wonder what he plays.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Albuquerque, he is raised and currently lives in Madrid, Spain at the time of this being published. So that's cool. I don't know how they got, like, connected, but...
Connections.
Or probably just through Oni Press, but...
Yeah.
He's... At the time they did this, he had just done some like Dynamite books and I think another Oni Press one. But since then, he's done like Marvel stuff, which is cool.
Okay,
I like his work there. And then, yeah, that's basically it for the Back Matter. So,
yeah, too bad.
Yeah, one of my favorites. I would probably say just because it looks like it's a classified file.
Yeah,
and I just think that that's fun. So
okay, so spoilers. Are there other aliens other than those little, like, top things?
Yeah, those are basically, like, the pawns.
So are there humanoid ones or just bigger of those?
They're not bigger. They're just designed cooler.
Okay.
And like, they have shit that's, like, floating around them, I think.
And so that, like, gun-looking thing was called the chandelier. What was that actually for?
Shooting.
It was a gun.
Okay. It's a gun, yeah.
Gotcha.
Other fun spoilers that I remember.
Okay.
Drum comes back.
Nice.
And he has alien powers.
Oh, dope.
Also, Astra. The aliens want Astra.
Why?
Because. I don't know. I can't remember. But I was like, oh, fuck. They have to give up a baby.
Do they give him the baby?
Temporarily, yeah.
Wow. Weird.
And, well, at that point, she's like a toddler. She can, like, speak. And the aliens will, like, project... language like into her brain so that she understands it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So did they ever like reveal or like communicate why they had a gun?
Yes. I just can't remember. Another big point. Drum, who's like an ally with the aliens, comes back to Earth. And he has alien powers and he's crazy.
He's crazy?
Yeah.
Does he terrorize people or something? Or
I just remember he like the alien ship lands and it's in like Washington.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Washington DC.
You know, there's not a lot of alien books, you know, like that are just like straight up. Like I know there's like superheroes that are technically aliens.
Right.
But this
not
kind
in, like,
of
this
shit,
capacity.
Yeah, this shit where it's like almost like Independence Day style where like we don't know what's going on and what they're capable of.
And there's really just, not, you know.
And we're like just trying to discover shit.
I really feel like this is one of the, like this would be a really good HBO show. Like I think that of like Charles Soule's stuff, I think this would definitely be the one to be adapted. But I think it like, it probably will be adapted in some form or another.
There's a large number of comic books that could be adapted and be way better than a lot of shit on TV.
Exactly. Anyway, what do you rate this book using our new rating system?
Oh shit! What did we say it was like?
For me, in the words of Cold Stone, this is a gotta have it.
Okay, right now I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
the whole series for me is like I gotta have it because it escalates really well.
Yeah, I think after completing it, it'd be like I gotta have it. So,
yeah.
But as of right now, it really solid book, and I would definitely read more.
Yeah. So it'd be a venti for you. Assuming that Trenta is like the biggest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely written really well, which is. Like, it's Charles Soule. We know he's going to be great.
Yeah.
But, like, as you read, like, more and more just kind of ongoing series, you realize that can be kind of hard to come by.
Yeah.
And just sometimes just lazy writing or whatnot. But this is really cool. And you always love, like, independent stuff because they're just such free ideas.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
So, yeah, good stuff.
Good stuff.
Big fan.
Yeah, so with that, we'll go into the pull list, : shove it in your box.
Thank you for remembering that, because I always just put, like, pull list on, like, my notes. The pull list, what did you shove in your box? I didn't get anything. I don't know if anything that I am subscribed to came out today. Let me double check.
It was a pretty light week. Like, I only got Future State stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, Ash posted what they got.
So I picked up DC Future State Dark Detective.
It's a Green Lantern book.
Yeah, I picked up the Green Lantern book. State. Yeah, it's Future State. So yeah, I picked up Dark Detective, and I wasn't going to initially until I saw that the artist was Klaus's own Dan Mora is on that book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so I was like, fuck yeah, I wanted to see more of his stuff. So I picked up Dark Detective, I picked up Green Lantern, and I also picked up a Dustin Nguyen variant cover of Teen Titans Future State.
Oh, sick. Oh, I didn't even know that was Teen Titans. That's dope.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to pick that one up, but the artist on that is Rafa Sandoval, and he did like a really cool like run on like Green Lantern when Rebirth came out. Mm. So I really like his stuff, so that's why I picked that one up. But yeah, those are the three issues I got.
It looks like books definitely came out, but I don't think anyone are really for me.
Yeah, there's a couple like new series that came out. Like Image came out with a book called Ha Ha.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like it was, you know, I couldn't really tell what it was about, but it's by like Vanessa Del Rey.
Okay.
Anyway, I did read this week, so I read some of the DC Future State stuff.
How's that?
So I read the new Batman one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Dude, isn't the interiors by Nick Darrington?
Yes.
Oh, dope.
It's wonderful, right?
The art or like the book in general?
The writing is kind of cool. I don't really know where it's going yet. It's four issues, right. So not as much as accomplished in like the other DC Future State stuff. But
right.
Writing's pretty good, I would say. But yeah, Darrington's work is just so good. So fun to read. And like the coloring on it is unbelievable.
Who does it? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. Okay. I'm going to look it up now. But it's like, it's really, it it works with Nick Darrington's art so well. Like, I'm a big fan. But what I didn't expect is that there's three different stories in there. Like, there's John Ridley, Nick Darrington, and then there's like two other creative teams in there doing their own story that are like future Batman stories. Like, it's not all Batman.
Like, okay,
Batman himself, like the guy that wears the Batman suit, is like the first 20 pages of it.
Okay.
And then like the next two stories, which I think are also, maybe it's like 15, I don't know, but they're not like full size issues.
Okay. But
the other two stories are like not based around Batman, and those weren't my favorite either.
So this is all within the same issue.
Correct.
Okay. Was it like a big issue?
Yeah, I looked and it was like $8, and I was like, shit, I paid
$8? Oh, fuck. So what were the other stories about? Like,
Commissioner Gordon? The next Batman, so the color, it doesn't even have it on, hold on, let me find it. So yeah, the other stories, one was like about the Signal.
And oh, God.
It was like the Signal and then like a future Katana.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And that one's cool.
Yeah, it seemed cool.
That one I'll read. And then the third one I just was not interested in whatsoever. It's like an Outsiders book, essentially. Future Outsiders. And I was like, this is not what I want to read. But I'll still pick it up for just the Darrington story.
Yeah. Just
because it looks great.
Right.
Maybe if they're, I don't know. I'll have to see. I'll pick up the second one. And if I'm still invested in like at least one of those two Batman stories, I'll still pick it up. But the stronger book from last week was definitely the Wonder Woman one.
The where's
Joelle Jones is doing Wonder Woman,
and what was her thing? Like, what was different about this Wonder Woman?
So, I'm pretty sure it's still Diana, but it's just like a story. It's just like a solid Wonder Woman story, I guess. Like,
okay,
it's not like overly complicated, but it looks like the design of it is really well done.
That's not the one that was like from like a different country. I think there's like two Wonder Woman books.
There is, yeah. So I think the Joelle Jones one is in a different country.
This one? Is that the one?
Correct.
That, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she looks like darker almost, but that might just be like the tone that they decided to go with.
I think she does have like a darker skin tone.
Okay, maybe she's got a really good tan over the years.
It could be that, but yeah, I just like Joelle Jones stuff. Like, it's so fresh and so good. But basically,
is she writing?
Yeah, writing and drawing.
Oh, God.
And then Jordi Belair is coloring.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's great.
What a combination.
Yeah.
She draws like the best like Catwoman.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so much better in Wonder Woman.
And I think I've seen her draw Wonder Woman before. So yeah,
it's like
super solid.
It's an awesome Wonder Woman. So
that's sick.
And then I also read the Eternals.
One
with Asada Ribic in it.
Nice.
I'm not a fan. I'm probably not going to pick up issue 2.
Oh, all right.
But essentially the idea is all the Eternals are alive again. I guess there's 100 of them, which I didn't know.
Oh.
Or at least in this book. But one of them gets murdered. And so...
You don't say.
Who's a space guy that might murder?
Oh, dude, is it Null?
No.
What is his name? Gore?
No. It's not that.
Oh.
Who's another space guy that's popular in Marvel?
Galactus.
No.
Thanos.
Yes.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
How original.
What a great idea. Yeah.
Wait, is it Gore? Is that God Killer?
Yeah, Gore is the God Killer.
Oh, okay.
Thanos is the one that seems like killed an Eternal. So I'm not a big fan.
Okay.
This odd stuff is good, though. He's still really fresh. And Matthew Wilson colors it.
Dope.
But, yeah, it wasn't my favorite.
That's too bad.
Yeah. It was Tamara Bonvillain that colors Nick Darrington, by the way. I don't know what
she was. Oh, I feel like we've read something from her.
She did one of the holiday specials.
The one that we did?
No, Doom Patrol. Okay, so I guess she does color Nick Darrington.
Oh, cool.
No, this is the new Doom Patrol.
She does do new Doom Patrol?
Oh, no, she does the old one, too. The one that we read. Okay, yeah. Well, she colors it a lot differently. Like, a lot of the atmosphere is like, I don't know, Technicolor. Like, a lot of the backgrounds are like green and blue and shit, and it looks really cool.
Nice.
What did you do this week?
We watched Rango.
We watched Rango, a fucking classic.
A classic,
a trippy as shit movie as well.
You know what? Classic's a stretch. I just remember liking it when it came out, and then that was the first time I revisited it, I think.
Yeah, I haven't revisited it. It's definitely worth a revisit if you haven't seen it in like the 10 years or whatever
since it came out. You definitely pick up things on you definitely pick up things as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But dude, the animation in that movie is like super disturbing, honestly.
Yeah, it really is.
But you kind of appreciate that's like the only movie that looks like that as far as kids movies go.
Yeah,
I think at least
it's like one of the only like animated westerns, I feel like,
too. Oh yeah,
which is, yeah, and it's a really good movie. I liked it way more than when I saw it as a kid, because I was a little scared of it as a kid.
Sure.
Good movie. What else?
I remember people not liking it as a kid, but I was like, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I watched a movie called Prisoners. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It's another Jake Gyllenhaal movie. It's also got
I have heard of it, yeah.
It's also got Hugh Jackman in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's from the director who is doing Dune. He did Blade Runner 2049. And then
Villeneuve.
Yeah. And then he also did Enemy, that movie I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. He does good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a longer movie. It's like 2.5 hours, but like it doesn't feel like 2.5 hours. Yeah. You notice that it's a long movie, but like the pacing is like excellent.
Cool.
To where like it doesn't drag, you know. It's Hugh Jackman's dad, and like his daughter gets like kidnapped on like Thanksgiving, and Jake Gyllenhaal is like the detective assigned to the case.
Another detective Jake Gyllenhaal story.
What was a different one?
I guess Zodiac. Even though he's like a cartoonist, he was also detecting.
I forgot we watched that. That's a good movie. That's a good movie. But yeah, so he's a detective and just kind of helps figure it out. I thought I knew, like, for the whole movie, you literally have no idea. Like who?
But
did
it's
it.
Somebody that's in the movie.
Yeah, and so you think I'm like, oh, it's probably this guy. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of misdirects and there's like twists and stuff like that. It's really fucking good. And I did not see anything coming, you know. And definitely recommend it. I know you said you're gonna try and do like a Jake Gyllenhaal run through, and that's one of the better ones, I think.
Okay, cool.
So good shit.
Nice.
Did you watch anything else?
I don't think I did, no. I made it a point to like read some of the newer like DC stuff, and then I've just been playing like Division in my extra time. So the Tom Clancy game.
For sure.
But yeah, that's about it. I don't think I've watched anything else.
Nice.
So yeah, that's the pull list.
Alrighty. So
we already know what we're doing next week.
What are we doing?
Chew. New Chew.
Oh yeah, New Chew.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that trade comes out on January 20th. And people should go pick it up.
Is that next week?
That's next week. That's exactly 1 week from today as we're recording this. Mm. So that's what we're going to do next week.
Okay.
That's the show.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can reach us at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com.
Tell us what to read.
Yeah. At tradewaiterspod on Twitter. And I'm at more like Nate Thick on Twitter.
Real Daniel Alejandro on Instagram and @DanielAlejandro on TikTok.
Yeah. And thank you, Nathan Moss, for the beginning music, and Daniel, whatever, for the other stuff.
The other stuff.
Yeah, the other stuff.
Yeah, you don't have to thank me for those. I don't feel like I deserve a thanks.
It's a thankless job, honestly. but yeah, anyway, catch you all later. All
right, bye.
Bye.